This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hi.
It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you. Matt, Brett, a lot to get to today. A lot of Republicans walking into rakes coming up here a little bit later on.
That is a theme I've seen in the news today, yes.
That was a massive rally they had in the Capitol over there this weekend. Dozens, I hear, showed up in a city of 3.7 million. Oh, well. Maybe next time. We'll get to that here a little bit later on. It is my absolute privilege and pleasure to talk to Cliff Schechter every time I do. It makes my show better. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us. National pundit, of course. Unprecedented is the podcast. Unprecedented on Patreon, as well as also Blue Am Strategies. And he's got a new YouTube channel. Yay! We get to talk about that, too. Hi, Cliff. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Updated you that the podcast actually has come to an end.
Oh, has it now?
It has. We loved it. It was a lot of fun. We did it for about 3.5 years, but it was a lot of stuff. A lot of work went into it. You certainly know this doing radio.
Oh yeah.
And I really wanted to do this YouTube channel. And John had something new he's doing around Ukraine and Russia. He's an international affairs guy on TikTok, and we just felt like we may come back to it at some point, but the doing it regularly, like at least twice a week, sometimes more, was just getting to be. So find me at the YouTube channel, which is www.youtube.com/cschechter.
Okay.
There you go. You have to give that out to people.
And what videos do you entertain us with, my friend?
So I'm going back to my roots. You know, when I first kind of made it, whatever that means, or sort of moving up in the business of politics, I used to go on these MSNBC and Fox News kind of debates, and they expected to always get like sort of wimpy Democrats, and I would just beat the hell out of these guys. Sorry, it sounds kind of self-promoting, but it was fun because they weren't used to people who are liberal who aren't scared of their crap and talk back to them. And actually, know how to hit them. And so that was something I did a long time ago. And obviously, whether I was invited on these shows had a lot to do with that. And after that, I would go on certain radio and YouTube shows. But with the technology where we are today, this was a decade ago, a lot of it, people used to be like, when am I going to see more of your takedowns of right-wing absurdity and of the media? And I started thinking, I'm like, these 3 to 5 minute kind of bits on video kind of where that's my sweet spot, and so I really wanted to give it a try. And I added some of the old Unprecedented people will find the video where we did some of the video interviews we did with some of the really famous people we talked to, a couple members of Congress and James Carville and Mary Trump and others, and some of the ads I wrote for Biden will be up there. But also every day I'll be making sure to provide at least a couple new commentaries. So that's the plan.
There you go. And it's once again on YouTube because we can't do, Cliff, I've heard this. You and I can't do TikTok. Apparently we're just, they keep telling me I'm too cool.
I am too. I don't know what John's doing. John's like 6 or 7 years older than me. So I'll let John figure that out. I like YouTube. I like the way it works. I like that I can do these. I can do multiple 3 to 5 minute commentaries on Republican insanity. And look, I'll just put it this way. If you like what I do and you listen to me on this show and you see me on Twitter where I kind of have a mixture of righteous anger and complete mockery, trying to make you laugh a little bit, that's what I do, And I'll do a bunch of those every day. And already, we started off at zero and got about 300 people, and we've only been live for a couple of days. So I'll take that as a win.
Very much so. And I'll link to it a little bit later on, and everyone follow it. I mean, it's Cliff, for goodness sakes. It's as good as it gets. So Cliff Schechter on YouTube. I'll link to all that a little bit later on. You brought up Twitter. You and I are, I think, on polar opposites. Because, Twitter today – compared to what Twitter was like, you know, in December of 2020. I'm not having to deal with psychopaths screaming at me about you know, vaccines are fake and doctors are making it up and there is no COVID. I don't have to have people screaming at me about the election is over, you know, was illegal. I don't have freaking Trump crap in my timeline. It is doesn't mean there isn't conservatives. There are a lot of conservatives. It's just the lies, the hate, the viciousness, the attacks, those are gone. Elon Musk.
It's definitely gone. I would argue with you. I wouldn't say it's gone.
Oh, it's less.
But there's absolutely no doubt that it's gone way down. That they have actually tried to combat it, and you know, they kicked Trump off. They kicked a bunch of infamous, you know, vaccine deniers off, and people like that are dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. So I mean, obviously, people. I don't even know if we said it, but the news: Elon Musk buying the company.
Yeah.
And shouting about free speech. And I mean, you know, I don't think he knows. Well, I'm just not going to get into ripping into him. But I mean, in the end, my view of it is, can I guarantee folks that I'm going to stay? No, but I'm certainly going to try, because my view is, like, we've ceded so many platforms to people. I don't care about the far right nuts. They've got them. But if there's anybody who can be persuaded, you know what I mean? If there's anybody normal, which is a good question for Twitter, right? But you know, I want to be a voice in there fighting for what I believe in and all that. Now, I'm not saying that it can't get to a point where it's so ridiculous. So I mean, it's even more important to me now to get the YouTube channel. I mean, it was good timing for me starting this now to get that out to people as a way to find me. I'm still on Facebook. I've been posting so much less because I was sort of sick of Zuckerberg for about a year now. I've been posting a lot less, but you know what? Now it looks like there's going to be a worse person than Zuckerberg owning Twitter, so I may spend more time back on Facebook again. I've opened an Instagram account. I put all of one post up there in 3 years. I'm going to start using Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, I'll start using some of the other things, and then maybe Twitter will either become less important, or if it gets so toxic, whatever. There's some other social people pointing me to what Core Social or something, and Mastodon. There's some other new ones out there. I mean, somehow we'll all find each other.
Well, and I think the mistake that conservatives make is that they feel as if Dorsey and Twitter blocked all these people because they just didn't like their point of view. And the thing that they fail to realize is that there is a culpability in allowing people to go on a privately held social media site, whether or a publicly, as far as a business goes, publicly held or privately held, to go on out there, dox people, threaten people. I'm going to kill Anthony Fauci, stuff like that. That there is a culpability there for the company, that unless they go and clean that stuff up, that if someone, God forbid, follows through with some of these threats, well, then the company is somewhat liable. And I think Elon Musk is too stupid to realize that is exactly, I get the impression he's just going to open it back up again, back to doxing, back to attacks, back to threats. And then all of a sudden he's going to be acting like I didn't really mean that when that person said this. I think he's about to get a lesson here in what, you know, the legal definition of responsibility is.
Well, here's also my question. And, you know, others may be smarter than I am, because I've been a business person for much of my life. It's been my own small businesses, which is, he is going to have a board to contend with. And so the question is, how many of these kinds of decisions can he make unilaterally? If all these folks who are thinking of selling to him, there's a board in place, if they stay there, not only do they have the power to remove him, but they have the power to stop him from doing certain things. And they have a fiduciary duty, where people forget, when you sign onto the board of a company, I know this because I've been on the boards of nonprofits, and it's the same thing. When you sign onto that board, you're responsible if something happens. You are signing over. You are culpable. So that board will be culpable too. And so the question is, as much of, like, it seems like Elon Musk is on a different planet, both physically sometimes and emotionally and whatever, he doesn't, you know, and maybe doesn't have the wherewithal to understand simple concepts as much as he does abstract thinking. The question is the board around him, and how much will they sort of hamstring, you know, the crazier stuff. They understand I mean, we see Trump is still out there with the election lies and with saying things and threatening people, whatever. You know, well, I guess it'll be a big test to see whether Trump's let back on, because that board gets it, you know, and they get it with some of these other people too that will lie. I mean, what happens when families of people that you know, I mean, it's maybe COVID right now. Maybe we're at a point where, you know, it's just the Omicron and a lot of people are vaccinated and it's not quite what it was once. But if we have another wave and that gets worse again, or something else hits us, and they let the deniers on there, and the cultists on there, and people telling people to drink bleach, and telling people to drink their own urine. I mean, sorry to gross anybody out, but there were people saying that would help you get rid of. Like, if you've got people and you start allowing that kind of stuff, and people do it, those board members are going to be culpable, as will shareholders. You know, who see their stock plummet and will lose all sorts of value. So, I mean, you know.
Well, and by the way,
all I'm saying is, I don't know. I'm willing to give it a try.
He's going to take it private. And I think the reason why is that I think he himself knows that initially there's going to be, if he kept it on the markets, that there would be an initial stock drop, because kind of like Netflix is right now, there is going to be an undeniable, as much as they like to think that every conservative is going to run to Twitter all of a sudden, the reality is that you're probably going to get far more people coming away from Twitter than going on to it.
I lost 80 followers today.
You did?
Which I'm not complaining about in the slightest, but I mean, it tells me something, right? I mean, I've got about 43,000 of whatever I have, mm-hmm. and 80 of them, as the day wore on, disappeared. I don't remember the last time I had, you know, more than, unless there were bot purges in the past and there were bots on there, I don't remember ever losing more than like 5, 6, 7 in a day. Clearly, a number of people decided they're not waiting around. Mm-hmm. And they saw that Elon Musk bought it or is buying it in the process right now, and they're just like, I'm done. And they have every right to come to that conclusion. You know, again, I'm not being critical of anybody else. I'm just saying, like, it's kind of like what I was saying with these YouTube videos where I go after them. Like, I don't know. This has always been who I am, which is I hate bullies. And I don't want to shy away from them. And if it gets to the point where psychologically my life's a living hell being on Twitter, well, I've got a family and I've got other stuff. And, you know, at some point you do have to make those decisions. And so if it gets really bad, then yes. But at first, my choice will be to stay and duke it out with these people. If they, you know, assuming again, some of the worst of them come back, and hope maybe that like the board can rein in some of his worst instincts. Maybe I'm wrong. Again, I don't have a business degree, so I don't really know fully how that works.
The thing which is, let's step back and look at the larger message here. I mean, you have a person who is so wealthy that without really even breaking a sweat, they're going to buy. And let's also make sure we understand this. Elon Musk today is coming out. It's like, I'm not against criticism. Oh, bull. He's basically going to purge anyone who criticizes him. The entire point of this seems to be that his ego is so weak and fragile that he's buying a major social media company just to basically shut down criticism of him. That's what at least it seems like at this point. The reality is that the fact that we have a person that has enough money that without breaking a sweat can buy one of the largest social media companies in the planet and basically to drive his own narrative, I gotta tell you the truth. I think that this is a really bad sign about where we're at right now.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think what that says right now, I mean, It just tells you the sort of vice grip that we're caught in, where again, thanks Joe Manchin and cinema, thank you for putting your stupid, I mean your fake bipartisanship, but your real sort of, you know, campaign interests or whatever the hell it is, you know, bribery or I can't say that, I know that, but whatever it might be, over the well-being of our country. Because look, in the end, I'm sure there's enough votes there probably for some kind of a wealth tax. I mean, this is absurd. I don't know if they would pass the one, you know, either of the two bills. I mean, and this is one of those things where I get pretty left on because as you just said, this guy's just playing with monopoly money. People don't have enough money to eat, and they don't have money to send their kids to college. They don't have money to do all sorts of things. And this jackwad just, you know, pulls $45 billion out. I know some of it's Tesla stock and some of it's some financing, maybe whatever. But the point is, as you said, that he could just do that, and that Jeff Bezos can just, I mean, that we have these unbelievably, I mean, look at what Jeff Bezos' wife is doing.
Oh, yeah.
Ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott. Look at how incredible she is. And she's just sitting there saying and giving money to all these programs in need while these egotistical bastards sit there and spend it on ridiculous things, you know, like him spending this on Twitter. I mean, it is a deeply sick society where we've gotten, I think, well past. We say, oh, another Gilded Age. I think we're well past where we ever were, even with Standard Oil, you know, and Mellon and Bank and some of these things, you know, 100 plus years ago. I mean, some people having 7,500, whatever, 200, I don't even know what it is anymore, $1 billion is absurd. I mean, I really do think, you know, when people forget, especially so a lot of these Tea Party guys who love to, of course, they talk about the cultural stuff, right? They want to be racist and xenophobic and sexist and everything. Oh, the 50s, I love the 50s. And I love reminding them that the top tax rate under Ike was 91%.
Yeah.
The 50s was a time, at least economically, where we really did believe in some form of equality. It was only for white men, sadly. But we really do believe at least that workers should have a fair share, you know, shake and should be able to afford, you know, a house and a vacation and stuff. And the fact that these guys are sitting on billions of dollars. I mean, so you have one plan by Warren, was it an extra 2% of per every million or whatever it was, over 50 million or something like that? I don't remember. And then, you know, AOC, who's someone I don't agree with on everything, but on this, I'm, you know, saying that for every dollar you make above $10 million a year, that you hit a 70% tax rate. It doesn't mean all your money gets hit 70%. It's just every dollar above 10 million. I mean, how can anybody look at our situation right now and deny we need something like that?
Well, because, and what it comes down to is that these people, guys like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, they really do think that everything that's positive that's happened to them is only due to them and not due to anyone else. And so this is, and it goes back, I mean, it's very similar to the J.P. Morgans and the Rockefellers and all those people of the 1880s, 1890s, when the union movement started, the workers' rights movement started in, and how incensed they were. It's like, how dare you peons talk to me like this?
Right.
I mean, that is exactly what the same thing here is, that they don't want to acknowledge the tax dollars, the tax breaks, the benefit, the working, you know, the workers that they get that are educated and brought in through the American system. They don't want to acknowledge that the freedom that they have because of the defensive military that they are protected by in this country. They don't want to acknowledge any of that. They think that they quite literally have done everything themselves. Everyone owes them for them being there. And if you dare question them, how dare you? I really do think that's kind of the point of Elon Musk buying Twitter, is that he really does, how dare you question my greatness sort of mentality.
No, I think you're right. I mean, and you know, I'm wondering when we get to the point, I've sort of said this in the past, but there's even almost an upper middle class sort of populist revolt.
No.
I mean, we're getting to the point where it's just the divide is such. I'm not saying some people, families that make $250,000 a year or something like that, you know, are the same as people who make 30,000. Don't get me wrong, but people who make $250,000 a year, you know, who are looking at college prices, right, and are looking at what it costs to send their kids away to even to sort of summer camps and things, and they're looking at, you know, tutoring for SATs and tutoring for school things in school and paying for things for sports teams and wanting to take a vacation and wanting to live in a decent house, like, the prices of everything. I mean, people have been, I mean, I'm lucky, you know, you live in Minneapolis, I live in Cincinnati. I was reading some earlier today. I mean, there are these types of people who make $250,000 a year. They can't even afford to live anywhere near San Francisco anymore.
No.
Like, you're poor there at this point.
It's weird.
You know, and like, at what point do people like that start saying, you know, get tired of voting for Republicans and say, this is ludicrous. I mean, we're being priced out, you know, by the Elon Musks of the world. They're destroying an economy that works for all of us, you know? And I mean, it's insane. So, I don't know.
My daughter just came home from school today, and they were talking that for almost every major college degree, starting salaries are down across the board. And I mean, think about it, this is not, you know, this is college degrees. So these are supposed to be, you know, people, these were supposed to be jobs, you know, you're looking at, you know, 60, 70, 80,000, maybe even on certain degrees over six figures because you have a college degree. But now,
right. Because
the line has been drawn, these super ultra wealthy people are not going to ever go back back. They want more and more and more, and they are going to find everything in their power to cut so that they can take a larger piece of the pie.
They're taking a larger piece of the pie. These big colleges, you know, colleges have gotten to the point where they've created all sorts of executive positions for cronies and people. I've seen it happen here in Ohio. I know it's happened in other places. Vice president of this or that, you make $300,000 a year at a state school or something like that because you're in, you know, you were the majority leader of the state legislature or something like that. You knew the right people. And that leads to the price to go up. So even families, again, who are not poor in any way by our past definition, you know, by the time they're done, their kids, the kids coming out are in debt. They may, even if they come out making $100,000 a year, they're massively in debt. The price of housing in any major cities, certainly on the coasts in Chicago or whatever, is so ridiculous because these guys have bought up so much stuff, you know, and hell, in New York, like, you know, places, there are buildings that are just ghost towns. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's basically, it's like international drug dealers and sheiks and like Russian mobsters. And what, you know, it's the place, they own the place there, just like they own the place in London and LA and Hong Kong and Singapore, you know, and whatever. And they, you know, spend a few months in each place. I mean, that's what's going on. And we're just sort of ignoring it and letting all of this happen. It's because the right has found a way to gum up our ability to do anything to regulate any of this and to tax any of this with our government.
Yeah.
From the filibuster to, you know, South Dakota getting two senators. And I mean, you know, LA County, which doesn't even have its own two senators, is the size of, I think, about 7 or 8 states that produce like 14 or 16 Republicans. I mean, we're just so out of whack. And it makes no sense, but for the culture war stuff, these guys are greedy and they don't care and they're lining their own pockets in various cities and towns around the country. So they'll just, they don't care if they're completely screwing their constituents and they're people who are ultra, ultra rich, you know, and we've now seen that.
Yeah.
Like that's been going on for years with certain aspects of China and whatever, but you know, Russia basically took over our presidency for 4 years.
Yeah. Everything's
for sale.
When you get to the point where the Republicans' entire platform was give as much money to the wealthiest people so they keep giving us jobs when we're done with our political career and donations for our next political campaign, that's when the wheels came off. And that's been the Republican policy since at least mid-90s, since Newt Gingrich. One last thing, though, if I can. You get a chuckle out of this. When was the last time you saw a 17-point win labeled as barely survived? Macron beats Le Pen by 17 points in France. And the way that
they... NBC reporter.
Oh,
yeah, there was
lucky. This was really a win for Le Pen. Was it? 17-point getting beat down. That was really a win for the loser. Okay.
You know, I meant to do a whole analysis, and I didn't have the time, but luckily having studied history pretty seriously, I can point to the fact that that was about the exact percentage of the difference between Reagan and Mondale. I'm sure everybody reported that as a really close one. Your home state guy, I think it was something like 58 to 41, 59 to 41, somewhere in that range. But also, if you want to use the French context, Macron won by a bigger re-election margin than De Gaulle. De Gaulle was a national hero from war. He won with about 56% of the vote. Macron wins with 58, but you know, he just squeaked by a little bit. It's a much worse. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, it's the same mentality of when the Republicans win by 1 point. It was, they destroyed the Democrats. And here it is. It's a 17-point win. It's like, you know, if you're on the left, I wouldn't feel happy about this. It's like, dear Lord, this narrative sucks. And it just is the natural one the media runs to.
Right. Well, also in just the fact that, you know, I was going to say the fact that Joe Biden, in the end, with all the shenanigans these guys pulled, all the lying and all the whatever, popular vote, you know, even with all the voter suppression and everything, like he had the biggest win since Obama in 2008. And after that, you'd actually, I think it was bigger, maybe bigger than Clinton's in 96. You'd have to go back to like George H.W. Bush in 88 for the next biggest one. Like, and they kept saying, oh, he barely beat him. He didn't barely beat him. He beat the hell out of him. You know, like you made the if we're being fully honest, how Biden won, you maybe can't, not quite a landslide, you know, but a large drubbing.
It was
what that was.
No, it wasn't. It was the American people being wrong. Oh, sure it is. All right. But we'll get a lot more of that on Twitter. I'll talk more about that in a second. Cliff Schechter's YouTube channel is up and ready for business. C. Schechter on YouTube. I'll link to it a little bit later. Get subscribed. It's just where you need to be. Cliff, all my best on this. Thank you, my friend. It's good to chat. We didn't talk baseball, but let's see. Yankee fans in the outfield are jerks, and if the Twins don't have Byron Buxton in the lineup, they're not going to win anything. I think that's what we've learned this so far.
That's a really very good. And we got, and out of all the shortstops we could have gotten, we got Kiner Falefa, who right now has got like the third highest OPS of shortstops in the American League.
Yeah.
If anybody would have predicted that, world's a crazy place.
Tell Josh Donaldson I miss him. I like Donaldson. So
I like the way he plays. He still has had a bit of a rough time for us, but man, I like the intensity. I enjoy it.
Cliff Schechter, thank you very much, my friend. We will talk to you before too long, okay?
Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us for a visit. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll put it open to you guys. What do you think? Will you stay up on Twitter? And it's interesting because being my age, I'm 53. Being my age, I went from 4 television channels as a kid to cable, being so freaking excited about 25 channels with cable TV, and how that was like the most amazing thing. We have 25 channels, so much to watch. It's unbelievable. Back in the day when people would sit down with a bowl of popcorn and watch the freaking Weather Channel for hours on end. You know, I saw it go up to 70 channels and 90 channels and 150 channels, and then all of a sudden the streaming services and the internet start in. And all this has changed. And I remember, you know, I remember when MySpace was around, and there was a few people, and of course I work in media, and so people are like, you probably need to make a MySpace page. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. And one of the reasons why I never really signed up for social media is because I didn't really see the value of it. I didn't see a professional value to it at all. I did realize eventually, well, this is a really great way for me to not have to do what we used to do, which is take your SIM card out of your camera, go over to a Target store, develop the pictures, then to separate the pictures, take the pictures home, figure out which ones you want copies of, get those copies made, then get envelopes, mail photos. Oh my God, how much time did I ever waste on that? All of a sudden I was like, oh, Facebook works pretty good for that. I can do that. And just get grandma on that one thing, and there you go. But if you look at social media today, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, those are really the big 4 horsemen of the apocalypse when it comes to social media. And Twitter, as much as, and it's going to be interesting to see how this goes, because on one side of it, Twitter is, you know, people are like, oh, when they started banning Trump and all these Republicans, we're leaving and going to go start our own thing. Well, it didn't really affect Twitter that much. But I already know a lot of people that have dumped their Twitter account because of Elon Musk. I tweeted earlier today, it's going to be hard for me to stay on this. And I want to make sure I read this verbatim, because I will have a hard time keeping this Twitter account if Elon Musk is the owner. That's not saying I'm quitting Twitter. It's just I'm saying I'm going to have a hard time keeping this if Elon Musk is the owner of Twitter. And immediately all these concerns like, goodbye, we won't miss you. I got news for you. It's every conservative social media site has absolutely freaking imploded. And the reason why is because you fools think It's a place for you to go to threaten and bully and make death threats, and that you think that that somehow is freedom of speech. And then all of a sudden, even the most conservative of social media sites says, we cannot extend our culpability by allowing death threats, because if someone dies and we have a posted death threat that was labeled to stay up there forever, well, then we're responsible partially. And so and all the conservatives get mad because they took off my threat to go gut Dr. Fauci. My freedom of speech has been violated. That's because they're stupid. They don't understand. First of all, threats are not freedom of speech. Second of all, it's a private industry. So I'm not sure exactly how many people. I mean, Elon Musk is setting very clear signs that he's going to welcome the conservatives back on here. But the problem is, it's not like there aren't conservatives on Twitter. There are tons of conservatives on Twitter. The problem was not them. It was the people making the threats, the ones that were spreading outright lies. Are you going to allow people back on Twitter that are going to tell you to take ivermectin, a horse dewormer, for COVID, even after numerous medical programs have done research that have shown ivermectin doesn't do a damn thing? Are you going to allow people to go on out there and say, well, I'm not going to get in the way of that. They have the right to believe what they want to believe. Well, yeah, until someone dies of ivermectin. And then all of a sudden, you're the first one to scream, oh, that's not on me. That's not my fault. You know, when you're going out there and you're threatening people, doxing people, telling people you're going to kill them, well, that was what was nice about the current version of Twitter was you didn't have that stuff. Doesn't mean I didn't have freaking knuckleheads. Trust me, not this weekend, but the last weekend when they were trying their hardest to make that Julie Blaha story into something far more nefarious. Trust me, I ran into a lot of far right loon balls, a lot of them. They're out there. It's just, these are the ones that just want to scream at, they're the ones, as I say, want to kick open the front door of your house, go to the bathroom in the middle of your floor, and point at it with a smile on their face and say, you have to like this. And no, I don't. That's why I lock the door. I block you, because then I don't have to ever know who you are. Bye. So long. Farewell. No, this is what Republicans really want to do. Is kind of what, if I can bring up something that Scott Walker said today. That Scott Walker. Yeah, over Wisconsin. Little Scotty Walker over there. He posted today, today is the 25th. He posted this yesterday. I noticed 8 people with masks at my gate. The rest of us are living free. Okay, wait, what? Stop. First of all, how many of those people are sick? I mean, there's stupid Walker, and then there's you. Couldn't some of those people actually have a little bit of a cold and just out of precaution, just wearing a mask so they don't get anyone else sick? But then again, let's go with the cancer patients or the people with their immunity compromised, they compromised immune system. Those people wearing a mask? That somehow is, the rest of us are living free, the rest of them, you're taunting cancer patients. You're taunting kids who might have difficulty with infection. That's where you're at. Because this is what the Republicans are. Scott Walker is showing us exactly what the Republican Party has become. There are a bunch of people that want to grab you, scream in your face, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, until you cry, and then they're like, yes, I won! And that right there is what modern Republicans think is debate. That right there. They want to grab you by the lapels, put their face in your face, and scream at you until you're like, oh, for God's sake, stop it, man. And they say, see, I won! Because they feel as if debate doesn't have to involve facts or intelligence or anything, that it's basically who can grunt the loudest. That's debate. And this was all started 20 years ago when Republicans started welcoming in the loon ball fringe into the right, who started screaming about birth certificates, and they all of a sudden realized, wow, if you sound like an absolute freaking loon ball that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, well, every camera in the place turns and starts hitting record. And today, it's morphed into people physically assaulting people at school board meetings, for God's sakes. Or threatening to kill someone who dares to put out medical advice they don't agree with. And I get the strongest suspicion that that's what Elon Musk wants to let back in on our radio, on our social media site here on Twitter. And frankly, I don't have any time for it. I don't have any time for it. And I think one thing that is an argument. Okay, and let me step back and make a point about something, but then and then make sure I clarify it here really quick. One of the reasons why Donald Trump was able to win in 2016 is there were too many people that had the mentality of just ignore him and he'll go away, just ignore him and he'll go away, just ignore him and he'll go away. And that is not what happened. What you had to do was get out there and say, as much as this pains me to say, that's a psychopath. And you have got a psychopath running for the head of the Republican Party. I'm not taking the high road and acting as if this is good and normal, for God's sakes. No, that guy's a freaking loon ball, and you'd better get to the polls to prevent him from getting out there. And no one really took that mentality, and that was the mentality you needed to take. And they didn't, and so they ignored it, and guess what happened? Now, the reality is I know a lot of Democrats who've come to their senses and say, I'm never going to allow that to happen. I'm never going to sit back and just allow bad things to happen. I'm going to fight, which is good. But here's where I disagree. To a point, I disagree with Cliff Schechter about staying on Twitter, is that it's one thing when the world is, well, and maybe I'm being naive. It's one thing when the world is basically talking about something and you can't really turn it out and that you have to face it, a la Trump 2016, like we should have. It's another thing when a person is on a social media site screaming at the top of their lungs and I can just say, well, I don't need to be here. Do I need to be here? I mean, I'm not getting any value out of this. And if you get to the point where there's not any value in being there on Twitter, well, that's going to cavitate really quick. Now, here's the problem. I just realized this as I was saying this. We already know how lame the news media is at times. What did they do for basically 5 years? They just reported on Trump's Twitter stream as it was freaking news. You know, at no point did they say, can we have a White House press release on this? Can we have this? Nope. They said, he said what on Twitter? Oh, my God. I mean, we all remember the every 3 hour news update saying breaking news, Trump basically making sweet, sweet love to a cheeseburger on the front lawn of the White House, you know, and you know, you just, oh my God. So they're going to basically cover it as news. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do. I just, Elon Musk is really a horrible human being. He really is. He's not a nice guy. It doesn't sound like he treats his workers very well. He's, Cliff brought up Mackenzie Scott, and I talked about her when that wonderful New York Times editorial was on her and the amount of money she's giving out to so many people. Here he is. He's trying to make, you know, phallic-shaped rockets and launch himself into space and acting like that's something benevolent for the humanity. I mean, they all think that. All these guys with their rockets think that they're doing something for humanity by putting their name on a very inappropriately shaped rocket and firing it into space for what? 20 seconds and then coming back to Earth and then acting like, wow, that was amazing. It's not. No one who's listening to me, or I highly doubt, maybe I should say, I highly doubt anyone who's listening to me right now will ever get a chance to go up in a billionaire's phallic shaped rocket. If you do, bon voyage, have a great time. But that doesn't do it. There's no research, there's no science. This is about just me. And until we wake up and realize that that's not necessarily a good thing to be doing, I don't know what you do. Anyway, it's a tough subject because, like I said, I already know a lot of people whose Twitter accounts are gone because the idea of Elon Musk having decision-making powers on what is and is not appropriate for our society. Once again, the man who made a rocket shaped like his junk and shot it into space, that guy is going to determine what decent conversation is on one of the largest social media platforms in the planet. We'll see. We'll see. I guarantee you this. I think I will make this commitment. If Donald Trump is left back on Twitter, I'm not going to be there. I can't.
Oh, I'm betting they lose a lot if he leaves.
If he comes back.
Or if he comes back. Yeah. Right, yeah.
If he comes back, no, I'm not. No, the damage that man did to this country. And let's not forget, he tried to overthrow the democracy of the United States on January 6th of last year. He tried to overthrow the democracy of the United States. And you're going to give him a pulpit? I don't want any part of that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's get into the coronavirus update. Let's do this for right now because just got to get to the end of the show here. And also a medical update. Matt's medical corner. Not for me, but well, a little bit, but I'll get to that.
Does it involve horse dewormer?
No, it does not.
Oh.
But, I spent some time in Europe. Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,158 newly reported cases, one newly reported death. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,493. Once again, we are now back into four digits on new cases. I know three people who are now sick. I got my first notice in a long time from the school district saying someone in one of my kids' classes got COVID. This isn't over, everyone. As much as Scott Walker likes to say, you're over. Tuesday's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Friday. Data from the weekend will be in tomorrow's update. The coronavirus variant currently dominant Minnesota BA2. That's in 93%. The latest samples show 93% of the 7-county metro area wastewater. That's the primary strain. Through April 22nd, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota is now 238. That is up from 234 reported on April 21st. Of those hospitalized, 29 people in intensive care. That's up from 24. 209 people in non-ICU care. That's actually down from 210. As of April 21st, the state reported that 3,904,796 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,697,262 people have completed the vaccine series. There are 2,556,518 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots, which includes booster shots. Total number of cases in Minnesota, 1,445,017. Now, one thing, now that's Minnesota coronavirus update, Matt's health roundup corner, help you out how I can. All right. One of the things I think is kind of part of my job is to do things that I think are beneficial and let people know, this is a good thing to do. I think the most common thing I do is my colonoscopy. I had my first colonoscopy, I turned 50. I got to go back for another colonoscopy. That's coming up later this year. Look for the video footage. We might have to start our own YouTube channel for that one.
That'll build up the audience right away once we're off Twitter.
Oh, good quality there. Yeah. Never mind. I'm not going to do that joke. Anyway, so recently, and I'm at the age where I have to go get checked out for things on a fairly regular basis. Just, you know, go get, you know, your blood pressure tested. You make sure your all your cholesterol is good, that sort of thing. And I do go on out, and if you haven't done this in a while, go get a you know, what do they call a skin check? And they'll check your body for anything that's a bad growth or anything like that. And if you haven't done this, I highly encourage you to do it, especially if you're my age. We grew up in the age pre-sunscreen, where every kid went out and just came back lobster red. You know, that's – you went outside. There was – you know, there wasn't any kind of common sense towards it. It's just you burned and then you went inside. You were miserable for 3 days, looked great for about a week, and then you burned again. That's how it went. That's what you did. So you should go get this done. I recently went – I've talked about this before. I went in. I had a mole. Now, the way they say it is this, like on a scale of 1 to 5, this mole, on a, 1 would be harmless, 5 would be cancerous. This was about a 3. It was concerning them. They were a little bothered by it. So they took it out and voila, done. Great. Love that. Doesn't hurt really bad. Get taken care of. They test it, make sure it's not cancerous, make sure you're okay, and they move on. And if it is a problem, you found it early enough to where it gets taken care of. And that's a good thing. I bring this up because I want to give Allina Health some credit. They're bringing back Melanoma Monday free skin cancer screenings coming up. They'll take place Monday, May 2nd. There's a whole slew of locations here that they're going to be having these at, including the Bandana Square Allina Health, the Bloomington Clinic on Old Cedar Avenue in Bloomington, in Buffalo, at the Allina Clinic out there, in Cambridge, in Fridley, in Maple Grove, in Savage. The free screenings are available to anyone. You do need to make an appointment, though. I'll put up a link to the story. Go get this done. I want to make sure you understand why you need to get checked. As you might be saying to yourself, well, Matt, I don't really go out in the sun. I don't do this. This mole I just had taken off was on my hip, and although I occasionally have hit the water naked, hello, ladies, but I wear a swimsuit, and it's not one of those European marble bag things either. No, I actually wear a swimsuit, and it was underneath the swimsuit. So this wasn't something that I got because of the sun and sunburn. This was a concern because it was just there, and that does happen. So, yeah, hey, Giuseppe, cover up. Okay, man, I don't need to see that, dude. You weigh twice as much as me. I really, that is like a trussed chicken there, okay? I don't need to see it, man. Go get checked out. I will put up a link to this story. Thank you, Alana. I think this is a good thing to do. Get checked out. Don't be afraid. Go get checked out. And at the end of the day, the reason I'm saying this is I don't want you to die. I don't want you to get sick. I don't want you... Get healthy. This is the good thing to do. So I'll put the story up, make an appointment, go get checked out. Hour 2 of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Brett, what'd you do to the live stream, man?
I don't know. I think I kicked the hamster over that was powering it. No. So got to get that all set back up now.
They couldn't hear me, which, let's be honest with you, that's, you probably got the better half of that deal. I mean, let's be honest.
Hopefully we got someone that can read lips. Maybe he was picking up.
Blessed are the cheesemakers. What did he say? And, he's referring to all dairy. I just watched Life of Brian. I love that movie. We had something that generally doesn't happen too often here in this city. We actually had a pretty positive sports weekend in this town. Holy God. Minnesota United win big time. You have the Wild continuing to win. I mean, that game they won last night was amazing. The T-Wolves won their game. They bounced back after the debacle the other night. The Twins came back from the dead, although not Miguel Sano's bat.
Well, but I think you pretty much summed it up with Byron Buxton needs to be in there. If
Mr. Glass is not in the lineup, we're done. I mean, that really is it. I mean, God, did you see the home run he hit in the 10th inning yesterday?
Yeah, what was it, 469 feet,
469. The StatCast has never had a deeper home run to win a game, a walk-off home run.
Oh, really? That's an MLB record.
I don't know if it's an MLB record. StatCast said it. They never had anyone hit a walk-off home run. It hit, 10 rows up in the fourth section over in the third deck.
Oh, yeah. He didn't miss it at all if you watch the replay. God.
And that was against their closer. No, and that was the second home run of the game. I mean, it's that simple. If Byron Buxton's in that lineup, that team was made to function with Byron Buxton as the engine.
And how do you like it? They're 8-8 right now, but in first place.
Yeah, that rest of the Central's not exactly a deep,
yeah.
a deep conference. Well, we're only, 2 weeks in? We're only 2 weeks in. So
your first place and 500 Twins. There you go.
There you go. Enjoy it. We are in first place for the time being. Who do we got next? Detroit?
Yeah, I think Detroit comes in here. Then they're on the road for a while.
They're taking it. We have no sports tonight. We had sports like crazy. We got nothing tonight.
Tomorrow's the big day. I know the Wolves are back on. Twins obviously are playing.
Twins, so. Wild are back at it.
They're on Tuesday as well.
I think they got Arizona. That's the game. There you go. They're going to play that dreadful Arizona team.
Yeah, I was thinking Arizona's not very good, are they?
Oh, they're horrible. They are horrible. Did you have a nice weekend?
I did, yeah. Saturday was finally able to get the bike out in some nice weather and got home just before those storms started rolling in.
Oh, yeah. I had to get up and fix it. The gutter was not draining. I had to get out in that rain shower.
Oh, one of those deals.
Came in drenched. I went out to Elm Creek Park Preserve. That's the one up in Maple Grove.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
You have?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy God. It's lovely. But their trail, I want to give everyone a warning. Their trail around their Mud Lake, which is kind of the main trail a lot of people do, is 4.5 miles. Okay. So if you're on a bike, that's, you got your bike, that's probably pretty.
Yeah,
you know,
a bike, that's not like walking. That's a little different.
That's a long hike.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed. So I posted some photos up on the social media of the Elk Park Preserve or Elm Creek Park Preserve walk. I noticed about 2/3 of the way in, I stopped taking photos. All right, let's just get to the end of this. We're done. But can I piggyback on what I was saying at the end of last hour about medicine? The new hip, because I got a hip replacement back October. The new hip, in the last, up until yesterday, between runs I did over at an elliptical runner over at the Y, and then hikes I've done out in parks and stuff like that, I did 15 miles in 5 days. I did 15 miles in 5 days. This hip is amazing, man. Now, it's not like robotic hip. It's not like $6 million man. I'm like running fast. Although, come on, man. I mean, really. It's just a little few pistons and a little engine in there. Ding, 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 ding. I'd be rod off I go. But you're starting running back for the Minnesota Vikings, Matt McNeil. Hi. Off I go. But I got to tell you what. I know there's some people out there. It's like I don't want to. They can't or they don't want to. They don't want to get the hip. If you need a hip replacement, go get it done. This is amazing, how well it works. You just got to get back up and moving. And if you get back up and moving, it's like it's like I was at 35. God, I'm an old man now. Back in the day when I was 35, dear Lord. So if you want to see the pictures of Elk Creek Park Preserve, or Elm Creek Park Preserve, go look at that up on social media and enjoy. 952-946-6205. Now, this weekend, I believe it was the Center for American Progress, those guys, had a little, soiree over at the state capitol. I don't know if you've heard about this Give It Back rally that they had. All right.
Which group is this season?
This is a Center for American Progress, those right-wing guys. They send us the magazines. I've never done one of their crossword puzzles, but I'm going to guess there's a lot of
that. Center for American Progress was like a center left one.
No, it's the I think it's the Center for the American Experiment. You're right. Center for American Experiment. This is the right wing guys. I think they're out of Golden Valley. They show up. They've basically got a magazine. They've got a lot of speakers. They somehow get their editorials published regularly in the paper and stuff like that. It's those guys. the American experiment. So they had a rally, a shindig on Saturday, I believe it was, over at the state capitol. The Give It Back rally. Now, this is a rally I'd actually heard they advertised. Okay? So, you know, they're advertising not just on right-wing stations, but apparently they were advertising on other stations, too, to get people to show up and demand that the state government give them their money back. Right? So, I mean, we're living in a city of 3.7 million people here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Huge city, right? Huge. Monstrous. They're advertising. You got to imagine they had thousands and thousands of people. It must have been wall to wall people. Oh, no, it was about 75. Oh my God. If you've not seen, there is video. You have to go up while it's still there before Elon Musk takes it out. Who is this guy? Scott Hennen. He's some kind of Dakota area far right wing guy, I guess. He showed up and he took video camera footage. It does not look good. There are open seats in the little rotunda seating section. Plenty of good standing space up on the rotunda. I mean, we're not talking, you know, multiple rows back. It's got to be about 75 people. It's got to be about 75 people.
You think that group could afford some seat fillers?
Oh, my God. Well, all right, 75 minus the politicians and the far right guys that showed up to basically try to get, because Jason Lewis was there.
Guys, he could be a seat filler.
Oh, yeah, he could. Well, he's quite literally, I think, has been.
Former congressman, they need you to sit in the aisle. Yeah, we're a little empty here in the crowd.
There's empty seats. They're doing a chant. They're doing a chant, and it's like the lamest chant. First of all, it is a white crowd. Let's just not. This is a white crowd, old white crowd too. And it's about 75 people. They advertise this. It's a Saturday. Weather at that point was not an issue. It was not. This looked, I think, happened in the morning. It was not relatively nice out at that point. And I think it stopped raining at about 10 o'clock. We had basically 6 hours of, you know, no rain, no nothing like that. And wow. Wow. 75. And once again, we're in a city alone where there's 3.7 million. And there are conservatives in this town. I'm it's not the majority by any means. But it's not like six. I've been to Lake Minnetonka. There are a few out there. They didn't show up. They didn't show up. It is. Here's the point, and I touched on this a little bit with Schechter, and we talked about it in regards to the French president's election. He won by 17 points, but if you heard the narrative of the media in this country, it's he barely held on at a 17-point win. Barely held on. He's lucky he won re-election. Oh, this is really a win for the losing team. They won by 17 points. 17 points! And they have the audacity to describe it as anything but an absolute shellacking by Macron. Meanwhile, this same exact media, whenever a Republican wins by 17, 18 votes, it's the Republicans dominated, annihilated, destroyed the Democrats. Oh, the Democratic Party is wounded. I mean, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of this narrative that gets pushed out there over and over and over again. I got to admit, I've talked about this before in regards to rallies and stuff, that a left-leaning cause can have 40,000 people show up and it's backed by the jumble in the back of the freaking Star Tribune. But when they had the protesters over in Jacob Frey's office because of the Trump rally at Target Center, and he was trying to get him to pay up front, and they were demanding, it was like seven people. But it was front page. Protesters storm Mayor Frey's office. Oh, boy. This is wow. And here you are. here is this Center for the American Experiment, far right wing, advertised, show up, let's let them know on a Saturday with weather not being bad, and it looks to be about 75 people showed up. Total. Yet this narrative is the one that gets pushed over and over and over again. The vast majority of us do not agree with this crap. But the media will always push the right-wing narrative. I had someone this weekend make the point that carjackings in the city of Minneapolis have plummeted till November. Now, I had one or two people that were commenting on that were, I think, way off base, implying that there might have been to basically get the, you know, question two voted down, that there was trying to, you know, this idea that somehow this was some sort of coordinated carjacking event to keep people scared in the city. And then once question two passed, that there was no need to have the carjackings up, so they died. I don't buy that. Come on, man. That's getting into the delusional stance of credibility. Come on. But I have no problem in saying with more funds and, you know, more agencies involved, they've been able to crack down on carjacking. And I would, by the sounds of it, sounded like this was actually a relatively small group of people who were repeatedly stealing cars. And once you started arresting them, you're taking them off the streets, well, things get better. So guess what? Carjackings down dramatically in the city of Minneapolis. And no one's talking about it. Nope. Has anyone seen a story from the Pioneer Press or the Star Tribune?
Honestly, you bringing up now is the first time I've heard of that.
Yep. Absolutely. Carjackings are way down, and no one, the same media that constantly, another carjacking, when will this chaos end? Well, it has for the most part. I'm not saying there aren't carjackings. There still are. It's a major city. It's what happens, unfortunately. But it's not happening nearly at the tilt that it was. And all of a sudden, you're not trying to scare people. You're not, especially not trying to scare white people in the tertiary suburbs. So, you know, and telling people carjackings go down, that's not going to scare white people in the tertiary suburbs. That's not going to drive the narrative that the you know, the far right wants. No. This is yet the latest example. And tomorrow, Eric Bernstein is going to join us. I don't know if you remember, we had him on earlier talking about the tax bill he's been writing. He actually was there at this rally. And we're going to have him on tomorrow, I think at 4:35, to talk about the 75 people.
Wait, is he one of them?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, okay. You got to count him to inflict the number.
I think he sent me a note this week, and it was something to the effect of, I'm like, what in the world? And then I saw the video, and I could not stop laughing. Imagine the most fringe act at the Rotunda at the Mall of America and cut the crowd by down to about 1/10. That's what you got at the state capitol for these Republicans who advertise this. They advertise this in a city of 3.7 million people. There are dozens of us. Dozens! The reality is this, is that this is, there's a lot of people right now pushing a lot of fake narratives to confuse you and basically give you the impression that one side is winning when they're not, and one side is losing when they're not. And I don't know what it's going to take for us. I don't know how you get these worms back in the can. I don't know. I know that Elon Musk buying Twitter is not the way to do it. But you have to make sure everyone knows. This is, I think, one of the reasons why there wasn't that, you know, any real coverage of this is because it was so bad that this Give It Back rally was so poorly attended that they decided to sweep it off, you know, ignore it completely to try to prevent people from laughing and laughing and laughing. Oh, ho, ho, ho. A full 75, you say? Wow. Wow, that's almost like a Saturday afternoon comedy improv show. You know, wow, that's impressive. Give me a profession, give me an object, and give me a time of day. And scene. There you go. And with Jason Lewis there, it's kind of the same thing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Don't allow the narrative to be driven. It's not. The reality is the left is the main ideas. Most people agree with progressive ideas. Most people agree with the DFL. And the DFL is going to kick the Republicans' ass come November. Let's go get this done. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. We might have a Dyna guy joining us here in a little bit. In case you missed it, I went to the Galleria this weekend.
Well, I thought maybe he was at the PAX rally. That would kind of be up his alley.
I don't. Maybe he sent manservant Claude over there to take a look at it.
We could send a surrogate, right? That's much too much time.
Seat filler. That's what that manservant Claude was supposed to be, the seat filler. We got to find out what happened there. We'll chat with the Dyna guy coming up here in a little bit later on. Speaking of failed objects here. Okay, I have to admit, this Minnesota 1 race is somewhat interesting on the Republican side, because there are a few fairly decent candidates, that one or two that are not horrible. And I do mean they're not horrible for the GOP. But you also have two particular ones which are going to be a very difficult sell. A very difficult sell for the GOP, for the district, because let's make sure we understand something. 1 and 8 are not 6 and 7 in Minnesota. 1 and 8 are not 6 and 7. The in 1 and 8, you have people, I mean, and they lean a little Republican. And I think they still lean a little bit Democrat in 8. I'm not sure exactly. I think it might be close. I mean, he picks up some of the metro area in that district now, too. So I think they're fairly close, but it's not necessarily a slam dunk either way, one way or the other. It's just not. And, you know, as versus 6 and 7, where you could basically run a turnip with an R next to its name and the turnip's going to win. They're going to have a decent chance at it. I mean, those are the way those districts are designed. In the one race, and I'm going to be honest, I'm going to share right now if the main person I would be concerned about, Matt Benda, the guy from Albert Lea. He's an ag attorney. He's a GOP activist. He seems to have, at least, I don't agree with his platforms, but he seems to have some coherent platforms. The Brad Finstead, I think he is the guy that worked for the Trump administration as well. Those two are not horrible. I think Benda is, and when you're looking at the DFL side, right now, Ettinger is the clear front runner, especially when you look at the fiscal element of it. I mean, we talked about this last week. I mean, he has raised quite a bit more money than anyone else in that race. And, and he's also, I'll be honest with you, he's also a strong DFL candidate for that district. I'd say, it's a candidate who's clearly a moderate Democrat, but his experience down in the community, especially working for Hormel, gives him the ability to walk into a lot of crowds and immediately be able to relate to them. And I think that helps him quite a bit. Ettinger is going to be, if it ends up being Ettinger, I think it's going to be tough for the Republicans. But Benda is a fairly decent candidate down there. Finstead, they're crazy. But then you got Munson and Carnahan, and I mean, a clown car falling down a dumb tree and hitting every branch on the way down. I mean, let's remind everyone, Jeremy Munson, who is not a doctor, nor is he a diabetic, decided to give diabetics insulin education because he was trying to fight the insulin bill to save people's life and made it seem like, hey, do you guys not realize you can just go buy this generic over-the-counter insulin at Walmart? And the first thing everyone's like is like, you know, that no, most people don't use that insulin, right? It's actually the heavy-duty stuff that they have to use. And it was only after that, it's like, I was just putting out a suggestion. That guy. Far-right Jeremy Munson. And then there's Jennifer Carnahan. Oh. Have you ever been to the Grand Canyon? And she went down there.
Not her style that she likes to go in.
Well, it's I mean, who those private tours, if you can get them. And do not hesitate. When you go to that front of that park ranger, you say, my husband is a congressman, you know, and demand the private tour. I don't know how it's a private tour of the Grand Canyon. Because it's not like we're going to allow you to turn to the left and see this vista, which we only keep for the VIPs. I don't think that exists at the Grand Canyon. It could, maybe. I don't think it does, though. We're gonna show you the real canyon. Oh yeah, I don't quite get it. Anyway. They had the endorsing convention for the GOP this last weekend down in CD1. Let's see how it went. Republican delegates in southern Minnesota failed to endorse anyone. No, they did not go with none of the above, but they did have it got to be a little bit of a fight. I'll get to that in a second. The Republican delegates in southern Minnesota failed to endorse anyone from a crowded field of congressional hopefuls over the weekend. Several candidates are vying to replace GOP U.S. Representative Jim Hagedorn to fill the final months of Hagedorn's current term. There's a special primary coming up on the 24th of May. August 9th is an election, and right away they got to turn around for the next election right after that. But the endorsement that was debated for hours during the first district Republican convention wouldn't have applied to that race. Instead, the endorsement was focused on the regular midterm election for the seat that will decide the represents the redrawn district for a full 2-year term starting next year. Winning Saturday's endorsement would have provided a boost for the special primary race as a range of Republicans to try to break away from the rest of the field. State GOP Representative Jeremy Munson led all 7 rounds of voting as the convention stretched past midnight, but was unable to gather enough support to win over the coveted endorsement. The latest round of campaign finance reports show that more than $1 million already has gone into the DFL and GOP campaigns for the seat, including a $200,000 loan that Munson made to his campaign. Dude, you got to win to make that back. If you don't win, you owe $200,000, man. Wow. I guess someone's not going to be going taking those space trips to the space station. That 55. Oh, yeah, that's just not going to happen. Records show that when excluding loans, GOP Albert Lea attorney Matt Benda has the strongest fundraising quarter of the field through the end of March. Munson tweeted Saturday that GOP U.S. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has endorsed the campaign and earlier announced receiving the support of Republican U.S. House Representative Jim Jordan from Ohio and Thomas Massey of Kentucky. Wow. Okay. Once again, 1 in 8 are not 6 and 7. And Rochester and Mankato are less and less, you know, Republican territory. And also, I'll point out the river cities running down the southeastern side of the state. I got more people coming back to me and saying, you think they're not nearly as conservative anymore as they used to be. They're not nearly as conservative anymore. But hey, those farmers out in the far western part of the district, they're going to love you. Thomas Massey, he's like basically like one of those clan boys. Parody, it's fun. Former U.S. Department of Agriculture official Brad Finstad was the backing of other prominent Republicans, including GOP House members Stauber and Fischbach. Oh, God, that's going to be some awful if Munson does win. Boy, I don't think he's going to be too cuddly with Stauber and fishy, you know, stubby and fishy.
There's your buddy cop show right there.
Oh, I'm going to guess whitefish. But stubby and fishy Munson and Finstead were the only candidates who made it to at least the fifth ballot during Saturday's convention. Hagedorn's widow, former Minnesota Republican Party chair Jennifer Carnahan, also running for a seat less than a year after the controversial end of her role as the party leadership. It should be noted, she didn't make it. I think it was it the fourth ballot? Oh, God, I can't remember. Rebecca Branson and Broadcorp were keeping track of that. I think she made it to four. She needed to get over 20% to go to the fifth. Yeah, you know, something like that. I don't know. I could be wrong on that. So, but she did not make it. I also want to make sure I point out it doesn't sound like any endorsements from anyone in Hagedorn's family, nor any donations from anyone in Hagedorn's family. That's love, amore.
Pretty surprised she did make it that far in the.
I'm not. I'm really? Not. Okay. Yeah. Because all right. So when you see the media make a mockery out of a 75-person rally, and I'm using air quotes on the term rally over at the state capitol. They're not talking to the vast majority of people, even the Republicans in the metro area. The vast majority of them are not far-right loon balls. There are a few, more than 75, I'll be honest with you, but there's a few. But what they're really doing is they're trying to present that most extremist far-right mentality, which does exist in large portions of Senate District 7, in large portions of 6, up the 94 corridor, the large portions of the very western part of CD1. That's what they're trying to make this incredibly small minority opinion the majority. But what the backfire does for them is it allows them to get someone like Jeremy Munson, the leadership, even though he didn't get the endorsement, they voted on the seventh ballot to basically not endorse. The Jeremy Munson is your front runner because they feel emboldened. They feel, oh, that this is what everyone wants. This is really what's taking over America. I'll tell you right now, if it's Ettinger, I'll say Ettinger or Painter versus Finst or for Munson. I'd be hard pressed to see that not being at least a 5-point victory for the DFL. At least, how is Jeremy Munson, Mr. Insulin, going to go anywhere into Rochester with the Mayo Clinic, where healthcare is the core industry? Was he one of those guys that signed onto the letter that tried to order tried to tell the Mayo Clinic, the best hospital on the planet, how to hospital? Was he part of that letter?
Oh, I don't know on that one.
We got to find that out. Because I can tell you right now, because even the conservatives there, reminder, there are conservatives in Rochester, not denying it. There is a 60 people that refused to get vaccinated and they lost their jobs and they tried to turn this into some grand, chaos, and it really wasn't. It was a small minority percentage. The vast majority of people, including the Republicans in Rochester, do not like it when people go after the medical industry because that's their industry. You think Munson's going to sell himself over there? For God's sakes, they're not even, let's go to Mankato. They're not even running a candidate against the one house guy down in Mankato. The Republicans don't have a candidate against the, what I can't remember what race that is. They don't even have a candidate. But, last I checked, when you look at population models, Rochester and Mankato are two of your larger ones. And can I make the point about Austin, where Ettinger's from? If he's the nominee, I can guarantee you a good portion of Austin's going to vote for him too, as well as the surrounding community. They create a trap for the Republicans. But this is why they almost have to now double down and make this extremism sound mainstream. It's not. It just is. This is what that far right that pushes this media narrative wants to hear. They push it. When they get even crazier candidates, they have to push it harder because they don't want to. What they don't want is that if all the Democrats down in that district show up, it'd be a 15-point victory for the DFL. And that would be something to have to, 15 points. Oh, that was barely, the DFL barely won that one. It's interesting how I've just tied this entire damn show together, isn't it? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Walls' State of the State speech. I'll get to that coming up here. And Dyna Guy, too. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Is the phone number. Facing one of the most challenging periods of his political career, Governor Walz returned to his political roots during his State of the State address Sunday, pitching a pragmatic, optimistic call for compromise at the center of the Minnesota electorate. I want to just say this about Governor Walz. Now, I'm raising my hand. I have been disappointed in him in line three. That monstrosity should have never been approved. And the second those bozos went out there and punctured into the aquifers, it should have been immediately shut down. That would have been good leadership, protecting the water. That being said, there's a lot of things he's done that I've been okay with and think that he's been very good, as a matter of fact. I'm not sure about Walz, Bucks, especially when we have a lot of things. I mean, I've talked about this before. I would love to see us take some of that money and create a state daycare, cheap state daycare offer for people to where we basically can get people into daycare so they're not draining their freaking accounts to just get their kids watched so they can go to work. I would love to have an option like that, but that's just me. Now, I know, by the way, I already know the Republicans will be screaming. It's like, government can't run things as good as the private sector. Now, pardon me while I go into my municipal liquor store. No, okay, getcha. Thank you. That was a pretty good speech by Walz last night. That was a pretty good speech by Walz because he really did bring out a very, let's unify, do this. So he basically has put the Republicans into the position of no unity, sweep the leg, Johnny. That's kind of where the Republicans are at. No, die, die, die. That's what we want. Paraphrasing. Just paraphrasing, you know. Comedy. Walz giving his first State of the State address in the House chamber since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, ran down the list of big challenges facing Minnesota, child care, education, public safety, answering them with a common refrain, we can do that. Walz positioned himself in the middle of the DFL-controlled House, which wants to spend more on child care, education, and other programs, and the GOP-majority Senate, which wants to cut taxes. Walz said they should do both, and he called on lawmakers to find common ground, and they actually do have enough money to where they can do both. We may not agree on everything, and if we're being totally honest, some of us won't agree on anything. Walz said, that is a reality. That is democracy, and that's the way this is, but we owe it to the people of Minnesota to try to find common ground. I do like how he called out the people that, you know, that are, never, you compromised, shut down the state until they do everything we demand. I can't stand those people. Walz also called on Democrats and Republicans to compromise on an issue that has thus stymied them, giving essential workloads in fields like healthcare, meatpacking, and prisons hazard pay for their work during the pandemic. Can we put grocery stores in there? The grocery store people, they deserve something too. That's just me. The grocery store people, reminder, I remember that we were here. Brett, you and I were here in April, May of 2020 when they were screaming, grocery store workers, get back to work. That was Republicans. Well, now it's time to say thank you because they did pre-vaccine go back into the freaking belly of the beast and kept this country going. So they deserve some benefit too. He wants to refill the unemployment insurance trust fund to prevent a tax increase on businesses. Democrats' priority is the former. Republicans most eager to do the latter. Walz implored them to make the deal. I think both sides of that are a good idea, actually. Despite his usual optimism, Walz' fourth State of the State address comes at a perilous political moment in the first-term DFL governor. He's working to get a sweeping package of budget proposals through a divided legislature with the end of the regular session just weeks away and Election Day looming in the minds of both lawmakers and voters. The president's party tends to lose state and congressional seats in midterm elections, and other political obstacles like the ongoing pandemic are rising in inflation are setting Democrats nationwide up for a difficult campaign season, Walz included. This November will be the voters' first opportunity to judge his tumultuous first term, which has featured a string of crises, the police murder of George Floyd, the ensuing arrest, hospitals overwhelmed by COVID patients, school buildings closed for months, surging violent crime. We should mention the Republicans are probably going to be running Scott Jensen against and Og. And Og. Don't forget Og against him. So part of this is not nearly the slam dunks as Republicans want to, and or the story kind of portrays it. Walz pushed legislators on education to use Minnesota's projected $9.3 billion budget surplus to boost funding for childcare, early education, and K-12 education, pitching increased spending as a beneficial for children and families, but also a long-term investment in the state economy. Even before 2020, childcare providers were said staying afloat was a challenge, and parents described finding affordable care as a nightmarish task. The pandemic exacerbated these issues, sent the industry into a full-blown crisis. Walz and House Democrats proposed pouring millions into early childhood education programs for low-income families and stabilization grants for providers, while Republicans say they're hoping to reduce providers' workload by streamlining regulations. Okay. I don't know how streamlining regulations is going to make it more of that. No. With a number of parents, especially women, who have to leave the workforce over this issue, the number of providers who can't make the economic numbers work, we have a responsibility, Walz said. Business is asking us to work on this, and we have a lot of bipartisan support to build the workforce behind the workforce. Agreed wholeheartedly. I think that's an easy slam dunk. Walz also said the surplus gives the state the opportunity to fully fund public schools, seemingly referred to proposals to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more on special education and special language learner services. Schools don't receive enough federal or state funds to cover the cost of providing services required under law, unfunded mandates. But remember, Republicans love those. Love unfunded mandates when they don't want to pay for things. He said, Minnesota has a moral imperative to address the state's worst-in-the-nation racial disparities in education and also an economic need. We are going to have to create a workforce of the future, and no one can be left on that sideline. The Senate GOP education bill includes almost no new money for schools. Almost zero. As a matter of fact, I think the only money they put forward is for reading programs. And they did this, by the way, they did this for a reason. They couldn't put zero. The Republicans wanted to put zero so they could use that as their starting point in negotiations and act like $1 more would be a massive compromise by the Republicans. But they knew that even they couldn't do with it. So they put out this paltry sum of a minor bit of money for reading programs, no other money. And so the argument is going to be is like, we gave you $20. You've asked way too much from us. That's going to be their mentality. So call them out on that. Walz checks. Walz reiterated his call for lawmakers to spend some surplus on immediate relief for taxpayers, referencing his plan to send Minnesota direct payments up to $1,000. Neither the House nor the Senate included the tax refunds in their tax bills, but Walz's commitment to the idea hasn't wavered. We should use some of this historic surplus, a big piece of it, to put money back in the pockets of working Minnesotans. I believe one of the quickest, surest, and fiscally responsible ways to do that is right now. He also expressed willingness to compromise and implemented some tax cuts as well, which have been major Republican priority. The GOP's proposal has been criticized as regressive, however, and would disproportionately benefit the state's highest, the highest earners. And we went over that before a few weeks ago where, yeah, it's basically a handout once again to the wealthy. The GOP response, Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, Republican from Winona, shared the Senate Republicans' State of the State in a four-minute video ahead of Walz's address Sunday. Miller highlighted several Senate GOP priorities in education, public safety, and taxes, calling education, you're giving no money to education. Calling on Democrats to join us in our efforts to get good things done for the people of the state of Minnesota. The Senate GOP introduced a slate of education bill known as the Parents' Right of Bills. They say is aimed, by the way, not funded. None of them funded, I don't believe, because the only money they put forward for education was for reading programs. Basically, they're trying everything in their power to gut the public education system, hand that money over to private businesses, and say, see, success. there you go. That's a pretty good recap. I will say this. It's that, you know, Walz, if that's his mentality, I want to work with the other side. Reminder about Jensen. He's not going to be able to jump away from that far-right sucking sound you hear that is trying to pull him to that far-right extremism. And so all Walz really has to do is say, hey, let's unite and do things together. They're going to be screaming about mask mandates and you shut down a coffee house in Albert Lea. I don't know how it's going to resonate, considering that most people in the state are A, pro-vaccine, be pro-mask and feel as if, as unfortunate as it was, Walls did a pretty good job with the pandemic. And although, as I mentioned with the Minnesota coronavirus update, we're starting to get worse again. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. I went to the Galleria this weekend. I will recant my journey when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. So I decided to sojourn over to the Galleria on Saturday. Went over there, okay, so there's a Barnes & Noble over there, right? And that's why I went. I mean, it's not like I was in, I've got to go get clothes. You see me on this damn camera every show. At what point do you think I shop anywhere other than wash and wear for my clothes? Seriously. I got a Thor comic book. And you think I'm joking. You think I'm not telling. I got a Thor comic book.
At the Galleria?
Of course, man. Well, it's the nearest Barnes & Noble to it. So I got it was a gift card. I had to go use it. So go over there. I go up to my youngest daughter is with me. So we decide to peruse the, that's there. We're going down there. We go to, what is it, the bag? Is it Coach? Is it the purse store? Is that Coach? I mean, you and I staring like lost. I think it's Coach.
Yeah, we're the two experts on this when people turn.
Well, they are nice. They are nice purses. My daughter wanted to go and take a look at this. That store clerk was not going to allow me to get out of her sight. Sweet Jesus, musky leeches don't have that much of a bind on me. The only way she could be closer if she was on my freaking back the entire time. I'm giving a piggyback ride around. She pegged me from the get-go and, yeah, absolutely, insisted I was going to be a shoplifter. How dare you, McNeil? How dare you, Duval? McNeil. Oh, it's Edina guy. Hey, Edina guy. Yes. I hear you slither on over to our pristine shopping area. How dare you? Were you there? No. I was making sure we were represented over at the Give It Back rally over in St. Paul. I sent manservant Claude and Mrs. Edina guy over there, although I didn't see them in the coverage. I have no idea where those two scamps got off to, but they were supposed to be there representing me. Gimme. That's what I like. I like the gimme part of it. Give it back.
Well, that's nice. So, but you didn't go to the Galleria, though.
No, I wasn't there. You see, I have manservant Claude run over there when I have to get something. And sure, they give him some side glances. But no. I don't ever go over there myself. Now, you say you were profiled when you went into the fine store, correct?
Yes. I went in and it was clear the woman was not going to trust me to get out of her sight.
Well, it's not like you were dressed like cargo shorts and a Rush Band t-shirt and flip-flops. I mean, only a complete fool would walk into a store like that dressed like that.
Well, actually, Donny Guy, that's exactly how I was dressed at that point because that's how I always dress.
My God, you baboon. Why don't you just roam around the Galleria naked, you fool? Oh, I'd be watching you too if you went into any of those stores dressed like that, like a heathen man. My God. We like to look like we're kind of regular folk, but we pay a lot of money to look like that. And just let it be known. We will not tolerate your improper fashions violating our high-end store retail locations.
Well, I will say one thing, Edina guy, and I think this is spot on perfect. As I talked about this, I had a lot of people mention, hey, you're white. So I imagine it must be a little more difficult sometimes when you're in Edina as a minority.
I have no comment on that. I've got to go. Manservant Claude, bring the car around.
Edina guy, there you go. I was dressed exactly like that. But hey, let's be honest. I wouldn't trust me either. I mean, you're watching me like a hawk. I'm in the studio. Native Roots Radio, they're up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.